The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 390, recorded on June 30th, 2015.
To the 390th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 223rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Fowl.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. So, we're essentially back from E3. Well, we were back last episode, but this is the post E3 episode.
And this is the one where you would think that we would be nice and rested because it's been a week, but no. Weather's been miserable here in LA.
Yeah, and we've started the Times Square countdown because we're at 390.
Which Times Square countdown for what?
Until 400.
Oh yes.
So this is 10. Next week will be 9.
Ten more weeks, and then it'll be the big Paul farewell.
Yeah, and what are you doing over there? You're opening up a can of soda. You're doing something else that sounds like a slinky.
Oh, that's my ring.
Uh-huh. Anyways. I'm just, like, down and bored and just one of those days. I have been playing, and we're going to... What have you been playing? I have been playing Batman Arkham Knight this entire
week.
How
is that?
It's... Well, here's the thing. It's great, and the story is great, although it's predictable, because anybody with any knowledge of the Batman mythos is going to know who the Knight is after, like, one couple of missions and say, oh, really? It's going to be him?
It's Tim Drake, isn't it?
No. Tim Drake is in it, by the way. Dick Grayson as Nightwing.
How about Jason Todd?
Jason Todd is in the DLC as the Red Hood.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, I can't say more than that. I'll just say
I'm
all
just saying
three.
As a concept in the
all three Robins are involved. So is Catwoman. One of the interesting things is that you can do missions, and sometimes you do it with them. And what happens is you can actually have them make combo attacks. So and then you switch characters. So then you're fighting as Robin or Catwoman or as Dick Grayson.
That's kind of interesting, I suppose.
Yeah. Here's the thing is that it has some great set pieces, you know, but for every really brilliant thing that they do, and there are some brilliant moments in this game, there's also parts in which I say, ugh, no. Let me put it this way. Rocksteady must have been a big fan of Superman on the Nintendo 64 because there are some stuff...
Oh, God. You're flying through rings?
Well, that's what happened in the last game. In this game, see, you have the Batmobile in this now. And in some ways it's fun, but in other ways, you know, if you're going to use the Batmobile, at least have controls that make sense. And, you know, the Riddler trials are irritating as hell when you're using the Batmobile. But it's the only way to free Catwoman is to...
Oh, if it's the only way to unlock Catwoman, then I care.
Well, see, the thing is, I don't know what happens, because I know he's trapped Catwoman, and you have to complete all of his trials to get her free. You fight with her as well in some of these things. But
if that doesn't make any sense, because if she's captured,
but you're fighting robots in the middle of the Riddler's thing. So he sends out robots to fight you just because.
Oh, just to mess with Catwoman?
No, just to allow you to fight with Catwoman. I don't know what happens after you finish the trials, where Catwoman goes, if she remains a playable character or what. We know that she was a playable character throughout throughout Batman Arkham City.
Right.
So I'm not sure. You know, they made Tim Drake a little older. He's like 18 now, and he's shaved his head. So he has
That's upsetting.
What?
That's upsetting.
He looks okay. There's actually one scene in which if you don't do a counter in time, he gets a scratch on his face. And I think it stays there for the rest of the game. So I reloaded and made sure he didn't get scratched.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's too much in the game. That'll be extremely spoilerific. So if you enjoy the other games, you'll enjoy this one too.
Okay.
You know,
but is it just more of the same?
It's a larger area, and the Batmobile adds new challenges. I mean, essentially, the Batmobile is a very fast tank, right? Okay. And there's times in which you have to be a stealth tank and do stealth attacks on big tanks. Like, you have to hit them from behind without them seeing you so that they explode. Of course, there's no one in the tanks. They're all drones because, you know, Batman doesn't kill. So it's a nice little clever excuse to have you riding around in a tank and blowing up other tanks. You know? Right. So, but the flying is better.
Okay.
And the combat is okay. I mean, it's the same combat. As usual, but you know the missions. Here's the thing: the Riddler missions, except for the driving portions, they really are nice little riddles. You know, you have to think things through.
Right.
And there aren't as many of those irritating question marks. I mean, there are all over the place, but the thing is that they aren't annoying like they were in Arkham City, you know, in Arkham Origins.
Okay.
But you had to jump through a lot of hoops just to get a single question mark, right? And I'm... The game says I'm 60% through, but I know that also includes all the side missions. So I think I'm like 80% through the... And, you know, I'm going to try and be surprised when they reveal who Arkham Knight is. There is a major surprise early in the game, and it's a brilliant touch. Unfortunately, I can't talk about it because it's extremely spoilerific. But it, and the problem is it happens early in the game, you know.
Okay, so then don't talk about it.
I know, but it's if you play it, it's a brilliant touch. And
well, then it can't be much of a spoiler if it's early.
No, it is a spoiler. I mean, this is one of the surprises that's gonna. It's the sort of thing you can talk about 6 months later, you know. But it's not now because it's such a great moment, you know, and such a surprise. And it's rare to have a shocking twist in early in the game, you know. So I'm not going to talk about it much, but
well,
it's so hard to talk about the rest of the game without discussing that element. So I'll stop now. I've also been playing Fallout Shelter, which is the iOS app, you know, for Fallout, and it's okay. I mean, it's incredibly easy now that I figured out what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay,
it's sort of like Tiny Tower. You know, and I'll say this is that this is one of the games that gets microtransaction DLCs perfectly.
Oh,
you can
really?
Play the game without it, and I've never actually used it. And I'm thinking, you know, for 99 cents, you know, I could do it, you know, but I'm not. So what happens is that basically you can get lunch boxes, right?
Okay.
One for 99 cents, and then packs for others. And what it does is it gives you stuff. You know, it just gives you random stuff. Like, it might give you a new, what's it called, a high-level dweller. Or it might give you a nice gun or clothes, you know, or something that really helps out, right? But you can also earn those lunch boxes in games by performing, fulfilling requirements should they pop up. You know, normally you only get caps, which is this game's version of money.
Okay.
But sometimes the prize is a lunchbox. Sometimes lunchboxes are duds, you know. They're like, oh, I don't really need 500 caps,
okay.
You know. But on the other hand, it's a very, you know, like I said, it's a very painless way to have DLC. And I'm pretty sure both Apple and Bethesda are making a mint off the game. Because
wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. So that's what I've been playing. What have you been playing, Paul?
I finished the original campaign on Heroes of Might and Magic 2, and I moved on to the expansion campaign.
You know what? I've never finished any of the campaigns in Heroes games, any Heroes games.
They were awfully tough. Not gonna lie.
Well, in my case, it isn't that it was tough, although they are very, very tough. It's because I prefer to play the custom, you know, the custom maps, you know. Because what happens is that me and my friend Jerry would endlessly play Hot Seat Might and Magic 2, back when Hot Seat was a thing. Remember Hot Seat? I mean, some games still have it, but Hot Seat, in which, okay, it's my turn, get the fuck away. This is my turn, you can't look. Although we did have a second computer, so eventually we just did LAN.
Okay.
But still, you know, I mean, that was our thing, you know, it was a social way of playing.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't remember a computer doing Hot Seat since the early 80s, but... Hey, more power to you.
Hot Seat was best with Mule. That was because people would screw you over, and you got, or you would screw your friends over, and you would glare at each other, and it wasn't you weren't hidden by another screen. You know, they were right there. So if you wanted to call them names and tell them what an asshole they were, they would just smile and say, "Yeah, well, guess what? I'm winning now," to their face. You know, no anonymity. You know, there's always the risk of getting punched in the face. So. But that was the benefit of Hot Seat. So anyway, so you finished the campaign of Heroes 2, and now you're doing... Now, actually, there were three expansions to Heroes 2, if I remember. One was...
To Heroes? There were like...
Heroes 2.
Oh, I have no idea.
Heroes 2. No, wait. No, that was three.
I got mine off the Humble Bundle, so it just kind of incorporates it all into that. There's just one flag that happened to be saying that I'm in a... expansion campaign, but it doesn't, you know, there could be nine.
I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of three, because, okay, one of them, okay, here are the expansions for Heroes of Might and Magic 2. There was The Price of Loyalty, which I remember very well. It added some great character, and that added new campaigns, and artifacts.
See, I didn't even know that was an expansion. I thought that was just the subtitle.
Actually, that was it.
Two.
That was it. That was the only expansion, The Price of Loyalty.
You might be thinking of Heroes 3.
Heroes 3 had three expansions. This only had one, The Price of Loyalty, which I got, which was really good, you know. And one of the, you know, the good thing about, you know, an expansion is good when you can't play the original vanilla anymore. You know, you have to play it with the expansion, or else you just, it feels like I'm playing half a game
now. I agree with that statement, though, because Settlers of Catan is pretty unplayable unless you're playing Knights and Cities.
I have the app for Settlers. Settlers of Catan, and you know I have it on my Android, just the base game, nothing else, just regular. And I have it on my iPad with all the expansions, right?
Okay.
So the thing is, all these years I seldom ever played Cities and Knights. I played Seafarers a little bit, you know, but not much. Mostly I would play straight Settlers of Catan. So I'm starting to play Cities and Knights, and I'm still, what's it called, formulating strategies for that one, because, you know, you have to get the knight, you have to put the knight, you have to activate the knight, you want to upgrade your cities, and all
exactly
that stuff.
It. Like, you have to do the most important thing first, which is get your knight.
Yeah, because otherwise, goodbye city, unless, of course, you get the wall,
but
still.
But even then, no, the wall doesn't protect the city.
Doesn't? Wait, I thought the wall did.
No, the wall only prevents you from losing two more cards if a thief hits.
Oh, okay.
That took me a while.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I'm still getting used to Cities and Knights, really.
Yeah, well, I can't play regular. I think it's.
And here's the thing: is that I found in one game that I got screwed because, I did not have the right resources and I could not get any ore easily. Or no, it wasn't ore; it was grain. I couldn't get grain easily, so what happens was that the pirates or the barbarians, they bum rushed us. That was like five straight pirate ship rolls, right? They just came, attacked, whacked everybody, and then I found I can't upgrade my town very. I can't upgrade it back to a city very quickly, and I just rage quit because there was no way I was going to be able to surpass that. You know, So getting back to you, so you finished you're starting the Price of Loyalty campaign.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm almost done with it. There seem to be a number of different expansion campaigns included, and I don't know if there's, you know,
it says
some,
four
I'm
of
only
them.
On the first one.
Yeah, it says four of them. So, yeah. I mean, like I said, Heroes of Might and Magic 2 has a place in my heart, and I said this last week, because it was the first one I bought, and at the time had a job. So I was buying every game that mildly interested me when it was released in 1996 because I had a job. So that's why I had Doom, I had Quake, I had Heroes 2, etc., etc. Even though, had I not had a job and I didn't have a good income, I might not have gotten them. You know, it was a way for me to expand my palate, as so to speak, you know, to say, oh, this is fun. This is sort of fun. You know, that sort of thing. And then you grow up and you don't have time to play those new games that you can now afford.
Yeah, no, you ain't kidding.
Yeah, so what else have you been playing other than Heroes of Might and Magic 2?
Oh, no, that's it. That takes up all of my free time.
So, yeah, the thing is that my friend...
Like, I'm barely keeping up with my, you know, my heyday requirements and...
my friend Jerry, who I played Heroes with, was constantly amused by the fact that the zombies basically attacked you by shoving you and going, ugh.
Oh, yeah.
Totally
watching that right now.
They're going to shove you to death. So let me ask you a question. Which is your favorite faction?
I always like the Sylvan.
Sylvan Glen.
You like them elves, don't you? Well, no, I mean they just have more of an affinity for magic, and they have two sets of archers.
Yeah.
I mean, I would suppose the barbarians would be next because they also have two sets of archers, but barbarians. I have to spend extra resources to make them good at magic.
Refresh my memory. Don't the one with paladins and knights, don't they have two, like a longbowman and a crossbowman? Or is it the longbowman upgrades into a crossbowman?
Right, one upgrades into the other.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not at all the same thing.
I would guess I like the warlock, because you get dragons.
Fair enough.
You know, I mean, but the only problem with that is that while the warlock has powerful units, they are really hard to get. I mean, they are, you have to do a lot to build those, you know, build their things and get, if you're not quick enough, you can whack the warlock fairly quickly if he doesn't upgrade fast enough.
Right. And that's part of the problem with Heroes too, is that the units, the different kingdoms are still kind of unbalanced. So it's not really equal at times.
Yeah.
Like you just pointed out a major weakness of the sorcerers, but that's not as true in later installments.
I also like the necromancy in units as well. I mean, they're okay. I mean, the bone dragon is cute.
No, the bone dragon's useless.
Well,
not in Heroes 2. Maybe in Heroes 3 it's better.
Actually, the great unit for the necromancer, if I remember, are the vampires in Heroes 2, if I remember correctly. The liches could cast spells, right? I'm trying to remember.
The liches are the ranged unit.
Yeah, that's what I meant. They shoot. So anyways, we're going to move on to news. Lack of female character choice in Zelda... damn it. The lack of female character choice in The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes explained. And this comes to us from Destructoid. In an interview, The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes director Hiromasa Shikata explained why players can't choose to be a female character. According to Shikata in an interview with IGN, the story calls for this sort of legend prophecy where the heroes will come together to help solve a problem, and that they are male characters. So because the game is set with that as the story background, you cannot choose a gender, you are a male character. When further pressed on the issue, Hiromasa... Oh, they used his first name. So, here's a question. Is Hiromasa his first name or his last name? Because isn't it Japanese convention to have the last name first?
I have no idea.
Oh. And they also changed it. There it's Hiromasa, now it's... Oh, no, same thing. Never mind. We do have a lot of female staff members who are playing this game and are enjoying it. Doesn't seem to be a big issue with them. And to be honest, Link isn't the most masculine of the guys in the world, depending on how you want to project yourself into the character. So, according to him, the explanation is that the reason why you can't have a female character is that the prophecy, which was written by Nintendo, dictates you have to be a male character, and it's totally cool because the women in the office like it, plus Link is already effeminate already. So
this is all bullshit.
And, I know. I'm just saying.
I'm calling out on Nintendo right now. You know what? You're all a bunch of fuckheads. And female players and some male players deserve the option to have a female avatar.
Well, here's
in a video
the
game.
I don't mind if they don't have an option. If you have a specific character in mind, right? I mean, you can have Lara Croft, you know, or something right. like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just say, okay, this is what we have, and this is how it is, and. That's it. You don't have to
right,
say...
Right, but they're not offering you a choice between Lara or her sister Julie, who's exactly
yeah,
the
I mean,
same.
Or a male character, let's put it that way. You know, it's just
right,
that...
They're not offering you any choice. It's like, this is we're going to tell a story about our one protagonist, this is Lara, this is Laura's world and her story, come join us on it.
Yeah, but that's fine. They could have said that. They could have said this about Link, and apparently, well, he has companions, right?
Right? But
now you're confusing the issue by saying, well, A, you know, he's, well, you know, by the way, you can have Link wear a dress in this game, apparently, so,
The point is, as soon as you open it up to a choice of avatar for the player, that is identifiable as having a gender, you should be offering balanced gender choices.
Well,
in the modern day and age, you know, Nintendo is really dropping the ball yet again when it comes to gender and sexuality issues on the needs of their player.
You see, I wouldn't mind if he just said, well, you know, they're just a bunch of other versions of they're all Link, but with different color schemes. Boom.
Right, exactly. There was no problem with Four Sword. They were all Link in different colors.
But
I would have no problem if it was now we are going to be introducing these three specific tent peg characters who are now going to become parts of this world in a endearing and eternal kind of way, in the kind of way that like Impa, who has been part of the series, is always a female character whose job is to look after the different incarnations of Zelda.
But you know what? You know? I would say that it would be nice for Zelda to get off her butt and start doing things instead of being kidnapped. I mean, she's already proven she's capable. You know, she's not what they call a neutral female. She's an action girl. But in all these games, you're the one who plays Zelda a lot. How often do you ever play as Zelda?
You typically play as both Link and Zelda in the final challenge.
Oh, okay.
Play as is a little strong. Zelda often helps out with the final battle against Ganon, but that's really about it. That's kind of a new thing.
I mean,
starting with I think with Twilight Princess.
Right. Even in Super Mario Brothers, you know, you can play as Princess Peach. You know, so it would have been nice if you had the option of actually playing Zelda.
The best incarnation of Zelda came from the cartoon. I'm sorry.
I'm talking about this particular game though. You know, and just, you know, say, okay, you can also play as Zelda as a part of this game. Although, you know, I wonder, I don't know anything about the game and if the mission is to rescue a kidnapped Zelda again, you know, or what. For all I know.
Right, and if the mission is to rescue a kidnapped Zelda, that's fine. Zelda might just be an idiot of a person and is constantly getting captured, or, you know, because she's next in line to the throne, it's just bad luck on her. But at that point, Link should have a female friend that he's not at all romantically interested in, that is just, without being a tomboy, because that's a stereotype, just along for the ride, also is heroic, and offers that own dynamics to the team. There's no reason not to. Nintendo decided to be gender-centric.
And it's very interesting because the thing is that Nintendo's also all about licensing. And if you create a new female protagonist, hey, you just sold a bunch of dolls and kits and lunchboxes and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you have a new character, exploit it.
Right. So, I mean, I could kind of say, like, if they had a story, like, if this was chapter one, an introduction to Link's three new friends, and maybe, hey, they were going to go we were going to expand the Zelda franchise, and they were going to go off and have their own adventure without Link in a subsequent title. You know, that would be interesting.
But I just think they went with just a color swap Link for this, you know. So
No, we saw the assets at E3.
Oh, you did. I didn't.
We glanced at them, and that they didn't really impress anybody.
I don't remember it.
Frankly.
See, that's the problem.
Yeah, they didn't really impress anybody, frankly.
So, yeah, I mean, we're going to get into Nintendo a little bit later in this podcast, but right now we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Australian government bans hundreds of mobile and web-based games, and this comes to us from Ars Technica. The Australian government announced back in March that it was working with the International Age Rating Coalition, the IARC, in an attempt to rate the hundreds of thousands of games being added to digital storefronts. Under the IARC system, developers fill out a questionnaire detailing in-game content like violence, crime, sexuality, gambling, language, discrimination, controlled substances, crude humor, and scary elements, which honestly are both kind of subjective. Those answers are then automatically converted into local age ratings using standards set by the individual ratings board and participating regions, including Australia, the US, UK, Canada, Brazil, and much of Europe. The IARC content ratings can be amended or changed based on player complaints after the fact. Ooh, that's interesting. Google Play and the Firefox Marketplace are the only major digital storefronts to support the IARC rating system, and the vast majority of games that have been refused classifications thus far are from Google Play. The international organization says it expects Microsoft's Xbox Live, Nintendo's eShop, and Sony's PlayStation Store to join, quote, at a later date. Apple, whose iOS apps are rated by an internal content rating program, is not part of the IARC system and doesn't seem affected by Australia's experiments with mobile game banning thus far. Though the Australian Classification Board said the IARC system is intended to, quote, ensure users, particularly parents, are better informed about what types of games are being played on mobile devices, the Classification Board doesn't give any specific details for why any of the hundreds of mobile titles were refused classification. There are some confusing inclusions of Australians' list of newly banned games. A series of Sherlock Criminal Case investigation games are refused classifications in Australia, despite receiving the rating of Everybody 10 and Up here from the U.S. Entertainment Software Ratings Board, which hopefully our listeners are familiar with.
ESRB, yeah.
Yeah, the ESRB. Color matching puzzle game Pinpoint, cutesy match 3 title Pet Pop Pet, and jigsaw game Japan Puzzle also make Australia's banned list despite receiving E ratings in the U.S. Before expanding to mobile games, the Australian...
And, folks, he's about to drop out.
Badoom. Aliens versus Predator.
You're going to have to do it again because you dropped out. So just say, before expanding again.
Before expanding into mobile games, the Australian Classification Board had refused a classification to only about 80 retail games since 1995, effectively banning popular titles like Fallout 3 and Aliens vs. Predator from being sold in the country. That process relaxed a little in 2013 when the country finally introduced an 18 and over rating to allow the sale of games meant strictly for adults.
So the only one of the many problems, actually, but the biggest problem to me is that the classification board site does not give any specific details to why these mobile titles are refused classification. Now, here's the thing. The ESRB and other sites tell you why something is either AO, adults only, or they're refused classification and stuff like that. To not say why, that's where we get into censorship.
Yeah, I mean, whose agenda are they really serving here? Like, they clearly are not protecting the consumer's right to be informed about the products that they're buying so that they can make an informed choice as an adult member of a modern society. They are clearly prompting some other agenda.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, do we need yet another rating system? I mean, come on. It's getting ridiculous,
well,
you know?
Well, clearly, they feel that whatever their standards, you know, whatever they call their standards, I call an agenda, are, that ours are far too lenient.
Well, here's the thing. Maybe, and I'm not sure about this, I haven't really researched it too heavily into this, but like I said, there are a couple hundred thousand mobile titles, right? And it could be that this particular rating system is just for mobile titles, and they're taking on the inordinate task of having to rate these games, you know?
But you know what? As much as I disagree with the way the Australian government has tried approaching this problem, at least they're doing something that would counteract proprietary chokeholds on content the way that Apple does on its platform,
yeah,
which I find appalling.
Well, guess what? That's going to be a later article in this podcast. Spoiler alert!
Ooh, no, that's not a spoiler. That's a teaser.
That's a teaser, yeah, I guess. But we will be discussing that.
So
you should withhold your opinions on Apple until we get to that. So, I don't know. It's, you know, at some point, I would just like the rating system to just... See, here's the thing. These are voluntary ratings, by the way. Quote-unquote voluntary.
Right. It's the same system that goes on in America with the film industry.
And I would just like to be able, no rating, just content, you know, just this. It has this amount of sexuality, this amount of violence, this amount of blah, 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 and that's it. No rating, you know. People should have brains enough to understand if it's for kids or not, you know.
People should have a lot of things, Jonah.
You know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, This makes the V-chip look good, because at least the parents are actively deciding what their kids can play and not.
Right?
Not from what people say is the content, just because they did the research and say, we don't want you watching this. You know?
I agree.
Although, you know, some people abuse the V-chip, but that's another story, and it's also for television, not for video games.
Right.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Oh, you know, this is ratings and Nintendo podcasts this week. Nintendo has no problems changing franchises despite fan outcry. And this comes to us from My Nintendo. Not your Nintendo, My Nintendo. Actually, I don't have a Nintendo, so it would be your Nintendo, Paul.
My Nintendo would never say any of this nonsense. I don't know who these people are, but this ain't my Nintendo.
The initial response to Metroid Prime Federation Force at this year's E3 probably wasn't what Nintendo had anticipated. However, Nintendo President Reggie Fils-Aimé, Paul's best friend there, says that the company has no problems transforming beloved franchises and making them feel new again. Reggie also said that fans shouldn't worry about Metroid Prime Federation Force and asked them to trust him and the company to ultimately deliver a great game. According to Reggie Fils-Aimé, we are taking our great IP and transforming them and making them new again by making them fresh and appealing for the fan who feel they know the franchise, but we're giving them new things to enjoy. What the fans at home saw was something in the Metroid Prime universe that they weren't expecting. The reaction has been negative. There is no sugarcoating it. This is an example of where fans who aren't able to get their hands on the game may be at a competitive disadvantage. Everyone who has played what we showed regarding Metroid Prime, they've come away really pleased. You know, if this is a direct quote, Reggie, you got to learn better grammar. All I ask is that our fans trust us. Mr. Aonuma has said that he is challenging many of the conventional wisdoms of Zelda gaming in his new Zelda. This has nothing to do with Metroid Prime, but, you know, and that's what we do. We believe we have to do that to keep the franchises fresh. We believe that in order to propel the franchises forward, we have to be ones to consistently change the paradigms, challenge the conventional wisdom, challenge what we thought was the essence of the particular franchise and a particular form of gameplay, which is why Super Mario Brothers hasn't changed in how many, 30 years now? Not one whit has it changed in 30 years. So it isn't...
As much as I... See, here's why Jonah calls Reggie my best friend. Not that I don't think we've ever met.
You did, mate.
But
did
nobody could call you out on your bullshit better than your best friend. And you know what, Reggie? You're talking out of your ass again.
Well, okay, let's break this down. Now, I do agree with some of the things he's saying. And that is, you know, if you don't make some changes, you know, and sometimes some radical changes, you know, a series can become stagnant, you know?
Yes, but just because you mix stupidity with intelligence doesn't make the stupidity more intelligent.
Now, I'm going to say this, and Paul, you may nod your head at this. I know quite a few people who love Legend of Zelda 2, the best of any of the Zelda games, because it's really different from the rest of the series. You know,
that's a great game.
And
I mean, it's really hard, and that's why, you know, some people didn't care for it, because they don't want to feel like they're not good enough.
Well, they also didn't like the fact it was, you know, it was the perspective shift, you know, true traditional platformer, you know, thing, and all
that
stuff.
But that wasn't a bad feature.
I'm just saying, but here's the thing, is that a lot of people loved it because of that, and a lot of people hated it because of that, you know? But
it was different.
It was different, and they never went back to that, and I wonder if they're ever going to do that. But I'm just saying, you know, sometimes you want to shake people up, you know, to get them, you know, you got to do something different, or else you're playing the same game over and over and over again. I mean, Super Mario Brothers, again, people, you know, it's hit a sweet spot, but sometimes, my best example is Pokemon, and you've played one Pokemon, you've played them all, and the only change they'll do is, oh, you have a second Pokemon in the field of battle. Big whoop, you know? You know what everybody's been asking for millions of years, and they haven't even approached it, and that is a Pokemon MMO, you know?
Well, I mean, they tried Pokemon Snap.
And they did Hey You Pikachu,
and they did
and Pokemon
Hey You Pikachu.
Rangers, and you know, but we're talking about the RPG itself, the base RPG. They haven't changed that in a long while, and I guess it.
What they're doing, rather than trying to do anything fresh or innovative with their main IPs, they're diluting their brand, frankly, of each of them, because it's like, It's not Metroid. It's Metroid Prime this one time around.
Well, here's the thing, is that I think Nintendo goes on the generation, because what someone finds boring now, someone 10 years younger who doesn't have that experience will find exciting. You know, you keep on coming out with these Pokemon things, but they're for the next gamer. You know, you're not. Sometimes it feels to me like you're not supposed to buy, you know, constantly buy Pokemon. You're supposed to get the one that was made for your generation, and then if you want to get the other ones, that's fine. But they're not made for you. They're made for the next generation.
Well, that's a stupid decision.
But that's the way it feels. The same thing with Super Mario Brothers.
I mean, if you're going to go into making a video game and spend millions of dollars on it, you're going to want repeat business.
So, getting back to why you think Mr. Fizeme is full of it, before we went on to the thing that, yes, you know, he is right that you have to revitalize a franchise.
Yeah, you have to revitalize it. You have to try and add something new, but it doesn't feel like they frankly don't care. They're just basically saying, no, trust us, our way is best. Like, guys, you're not listening to your consumer base. Like, this is what you get told. This is what you get called out on all the time. Not listening and giving your players what they want. You have this really kind of childish idea that your way is the only way. That you're going to cater to exclusively 5-year-old boys, and that's the only person you're going to make a game for. Guys, I can only defend you so much longer. I mean, quit fucking up.
Which makes me wonder if, when the next console comes around, if you're going to be more like, I'll wait and see. You know, because at some point it's going to get like that. I mean, it isn't going to be like everybody's going to buy a Wii or a Wii U, you know, first day, because it's new. So Nintendo has something great planned for us, and people are starting to get to the point where they say, I see the console, but let's see what you're going to make for it. What?
Yeah, I don't believe that Nintendo has anything great planned for me anymore. I feel like after 30 years of being a loyal Nintendo consumer, that I've been completely forgotten and relegated to games that are kind of infantile, not really the challenge that I'm looking for anymore, and quite frankly, not enjoyable. I don't feel like I've been appreciated for my vast amount of time that I've spent with them as a...
What was the last game that you really enjoyed on the Wii U?
Arkham City?
Oh, okay. So it's a multi-platform game, and it's not... Okay, let me rephrase. What was the last Nintendo first-party game that you really enjoyed on the Wii U?
I can't remember. I hated Skyward Sword. I thought it was really bad.
Well, wait. What was bad about Skyward Sword? It didn't seem any different to me than any other of the recent Zelda games.
It was frustrating. It was drawn-out playtimes with fetch quests.
Oh.
It was not anything where you could figure out a puzzle. You weren't free to explore on your own. It was go here, go here, go here, go here, go here. You weren't just, like, left alone a little bit to go exploring. Which is, I mean...
Well, that's the base of it.
Link and I have been traveling together for... Like I said, Link and I have been traveling together for over 25
years.
We just want to go hang out by ourselves sometime.
That's the entire point of the first Zelda, was that you were wandering around this landscape. You know, some places were locked off. You had to get items to be able to unlock those places.
But
you're still free to go anywhere. What?
There are none of those things for you to figure out now. It's like every time there's a bumper, someone's standing there like, you need to go to this ranch and get the milk for the silver key, and then you can come back.
So you're saying it's become too linear.
Yeah. Now I just feel bored.
It's too linear, in other words.
Yeah, now I'm just running around doing exactly what you told me to do. I'm not exploring. I'm not getting a delight from finding something on my own.
By the way, I'm going to say this as well. I'm liking, since you brought up Batman and Arkham City, I'm liking Batman Arkham Knight a lot more than I did City.
Really?
I think
why?
Because the open world in Arkham Knight doesn't feel as random as it does in Arkham City. In Arkham City, I felt like I was wandering around and getting lost. And I guess maybe it's density. Arkham Knight has a lot more things to do, you know. Huh. And if you're gonna have an open world, you better have a lot of things to do, you know. You can't have it so. And the ironic part is that Arkham Knight is a far bigger place than Arkham City was.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I feel like there's more to do. And I don't know. It's one of those je ne sais quoi sort of things. I just guess it's denser. You know, so you're able to feel like you're doing something in Arkham Knight than you were in Arkham City.
Right.
You know, I think you were more, and the thing is that even the, what's ironic is that I was more, I kept on going off the main quest because I wanted to prolong things. You know, I didn't want to finish the main quest so fast in Arkham Knight because there was so much, you know, there was so much content in there. And also, that big plot twist that I mentioned earlier that, you know, you want to hear certain things, you know. You want to get certain information that's being told to you because it's just so fun. Anyways, getting back to Nintendo. When you have someone who's been 30 years on, or maybe, what, 35 years for you, maybe? Oh, wait, you're 30 years. So, how old were you when you first started? When you first started with the NES?
The original Legend of Zelda was released in the U.S. on my 8th birthday.
Okay, so for the past couple, you know, 2 decades, more or less, right? You know, you've enjoyed what they had, and now, as an adult, you're saying you're getting stale, guys.
I'm not saying you're getting stale. I'm saying you stopped appreciating the people who made you number one in the first place. You let them age out like some kind of creepy video game pedophile.
Oh, wow.
And well, now it's like, well, screw you guys. We're going to go play with the other little boys.
Well, here's the thing, though.
And that's what Nintendo's coming from.
This is a complaint that I had and Jordan had a couple of years ago that no one listened to because the Wii was riding high. But they Nintendo, for whatever reason, decided they were going to cater their system to the ultra-casual rather than the core user. You know, I mean, the only thing I can think of...
which is fine.
But the thing is, these people aren't going to...
I also have a compunction with the word core user, because that's just ridiculous.
Well, I'm just saying, okay, the loyal Nintendo user.
Right, okay. Loyal Nintendo user. Somebody who's been with you for 20 years.
Right, and they decided they were going to cater to grandma rather than them.
Which is fine.
Just fine in the short term. But
right.
Grandma's not... These people aren't going to buy a Wii...
Grandma's not going to be around another 30 years, likely.
Well, she's also not going to buy the other console because, hey, it already works, you know.
Right.
I can still do my bowling on this machine. Why would I want to get another one? You know, it's the loyal Nintendo user who, when they're getting a new hardware, expect things that are going to, you know, things are going to be the next generation. You know, they want next generation.
Is it going to be fun at all?
And the thing is that, you know, one thing that people have to understand, next generation shouldn't just mean the technical aspects. Yes, they're there.
Yeah, graphics capability.
Right. But it also should mean next generation of gameplay, you know, because with all that extra memory and all that stuff, you can do more, you know. You can do more that doesn't have anything to do with graphics or sound, you know. You can have better AI. You can have more, you know, what's it called, a larger area to explore, you know.
Right.
And you now have...
Basically, they didn't bother to retain their first generation customers.
I wonder if you would go how you'd feel about a Zelda that was sort of like the Elder Scrolls, you know, huge, huge, huge area to explore, you know, and find secrets from. You know, I think
I would appreciate a Zelda that didn't treat me like I was still 10.
So you don't want any of the hand holding.
I mean, you know, it would be really great. How about a mode in which you could just turn some of that off?
Or just let people figure it out themselves.
Go ahead, put it in there for the 7-year-olds, because that's great. They'll need it. You're raising them to not think on their own critically, like I was, and that's fine. But it doesn't cost you anything to put an option, really, to remove stuff.
Yeah,
you
I mean, like...
Have, you know, press a button, here's the remove list, take these things out of the game.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, there's a statue with a part of it, which you have to hit with the boomerang in order to open the secret passage. But you don't tell the player they have to do that. They have to figure that out on their own and discover it on their own. Rather than saying, press this, and you hit the...
And that's one of the major problems. It's like every time you walk into a new room in a dungeon, the camera focuses at, oh, here's that statue, and it looks exactly the same one that you have. Oh, and your boomerang is blinking.
Yeah.
I wonder why. It's like, come on. Like, what, like, are you guys even, like, letting me think about anything at all?
Okay, so we're going to move on to the final news item for this podcast, and this one's probably going to press all sorts of Paul buttons.
I love when Paul buttons are pressed.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Paul.
Makes me feel all warm and tingling inside. Apple pulls game with Confederate flag imagery.
Games,
and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. I'm sorry, I had to control myself there. Apple has pulled games featuring a Confederate battle flag from the App Store. Games Labs, the developer of Ultimate General Gettysburg, addressed the removal of its game from the App Store in a blog post today. "We accept Apple's decision and understand that this is a sensitive issue for the American nation," the company said. "We wanted our game to be the most accurate historical playable reference to the Battle of Gettysburg. All historical commanders, unit composition, and weaponry, key graphical locations, and the smallest streams or farms are recreated in our game's battlefield." The blog post continued, "Spielberg's Schindler's List did not try to amend his movie to look more comfortable. The historical Gettysburg movie of 1993 is still available on iTunes. We believe that all historical art forms, books, movies, or games such as ours help to learn and understand history, depicting events as they were. True stories are more important to us than money. Therefore, we are not going to amend the game's content, and Ultimate General Gettysburg will no longer be available in the App Store. We really hope that Apple's decision will achieve the desired results. We can't change history, but we can change the future." A day after the news broke, Apple has now clarified its intent regarding the Confederate flag, and the company is looking to reinstate some titles on the App Store that are utilizing Confederate imagery. Quote, "We have not removed apps from the App Store that use the Confederate flag in offensive..."
No, we have removed.
Oh, excuse me. We have removed...
That would have been a very awkward statement by them that way.
Sorry. Apple says, quote, "We have removed apps from the App Store that use the Confederate flag in offensive or mean-spirited ways, which is in violation of our guidelines. We are not removing apps that display the Confederate flag for educational or historical uses," a spokesperson clarified. Ultimate General Gettysburg remains available for PC on Steam and GOG.com.
Yeah, I'm going to call BS because
bullshit. We should just change the name of the show to bullshit.
Because they did remove all that stuff, and they knew what the name of the game is. Ultimate General Gettysburg.
Right.
This is not, this isn't even as, what's it called? I mean, I could sort of understand if it was, say, someone not wanting to do, because there was an article about, there was something that that a toy store was no longer going to sell kits to build General Lee anymore from the Deuce of Hazzard. Every other year you have groups who want to ban the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn because it has that word repeated in it.
You mean the N-word?
Yeah. Even though that's completely missing the point of the entire novel and what...
Right. The whole point is about Huck's journey to understand that Jim...
is a person.
Being a black man is exactly the same as he is.
Yeah. And the thing is that this is not the same as a public courthouse flying it.
This is not endorsement by our government.
This is just a representation of history. And it is
utterly ridiculous that, it's utterly ridiculous that Apple has this kind of control over this platform.
Like I said, you're going to do this rant earlier. That's why I saved it for now. Go ahead and rant.
Granted, it's their platform. They could do what they want. But we're allowing corporate censorship.
But here's the problem. Here's the problem with Apple.
How much longer? So Apple will have a competitor, and then that competitor will decide what's going on. There's a systematic problem in this country where corporations are deciding what material we can get our hands on. Here's the thing,
Apple does have a monopoly. There's only two mobile distributions. There's Android, Google Play, and there's Apple, and that's it. And it's a problem if you have a very limited choice. And there's a problem with Android. Android apps don't seem to be as sophisticated. I don't know what it is. Maybe the language is worse or whatever. But, my bartending software that was on iOS is far superior to the same exact software, the same port on Android, even though, there's something wrong with Android apps. I think maybe they don't have as high a system requirements or what? But the other thing is that, you know, when Apple can decide more than half of the market, I mean, whatever percentage they have of the mobile market, that's a problem.
It is, but it's systemic of a larger issue. I mean, we were praising the ESRB earlier for taking a realistic and impartial view about the content that is in video games.
Yeah, they just say
by
what's
in it.
By the
same token, if they dare declare a game is adults only, it is the kiss of death. Walmart won't carry it. Target won't carry it. Nobody will carry it.
I mean, you have to get it from
like,
direct
site.
That's
not acceptable in a modern culture. I think Amazon won't even carry it.
Well,
and they send things directly to you. There's no risk there. If you're a parent watching your child and their usage on the internet, I'm so angry.
Well, I think we've mentioned this movie before, but this movie has not yet been rated. It is a must-watch if you want to learn about rating systems.
Absolutely. I encourage all of our listeners. I'll mention it for the next 10 weeks if I have.
I think it's still on Netflix. And by the way, this movie has not yet been rated. It is rated NR, not rated.
Right, because they never bothered to submit themselves for a rating from the Motion Picture Association of America, just decided that, like, hey, we're a bunch of people. We have opinions. We're going to enforce them on the entire country.
I mean, give you a little brief clip. Boys Don't Cry was rated X by the board because it depicted, if I remember correctly, a female orgasm. And you did not see anything. You just saw her expression on her face.
Right. Right, you saw a woman from the waist up having an orgasm.
And that was their big problem, you know. And then they talk about, well, these are people with, parents with children, all that stuff. But that was a lie too. You know, they're supposed to rotate their people. That is a lie because they did the investigation. They saw that these are the same people for the past 20 years.
The problem is that these boards have become unanswerable to anybody.
Yeah.
So we've turned over, and listeners, I swear to God, if I leave you with nothing else before I go, I want you to understand that we have turned over my generation, the generation after mine, and the one after that. We have turned over our right to free speech and to receive the information and materials artistically and intellectually that we wanted to corporations.
You know, ironically, if the U.S. government handled movie ratings, it would be a lot more lenient because the U.S. government has to deal with freedom of speech. And they will not tell people to, you know. So the self-censoring of the movie industry and, of course, of the video game industry is a lot more restrictive because it is self-censorship. This is not censorship, as in you could go to jail for saying the wrong thing.
It's corporate censorship, which is a much more insidious problem.
You know, I mean, and, you know, getting back to this, like I said, you know, Apple knew. They were not going to reinstate this without the public outcry. I'm going to tell you that right now. If people didn't scream at them, "What are you doing?" they would have happily just let, you know, this game and other games that are educational games or whatever game, you know, that have the Confederate flag in it or depict the, you know, antebellum, you know, South or whatever in an educational end or, you know, as part of the artistry, you know.
Right, and that's the other thing, is that I think that hiding behind exclusively the shield of we're presenting this for educational purposes is kind of ridiculous, because you shouldn't have to qualify it that way. This is not a history lesson. I, as a game designer and an artist, if I want to tell a story about an undercover cop who has to infiltrate the world of white supremacists in order to catch a murderer, I should be able to do that. And if the character attends a white supremacy rally, odds are the Confederate flag, and to be realistic, would be in that setting.
Now,
so basically, in order to sell my product, I have to delete that scene or that imagery or that realistic portrayal. That's not that companies don't have the right to tell me that. That's what freedom of speech is.
Right now,
that the government can't allow you to do that. We're letting corporations violate our freedom of speech.
We should mention that Germany does not allow.
Germany has a similar thing.
Does not allow the use of the swastika anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, for a long time, you were not allowed to depict Nazis at all. As a matter of fact, it was only a few years that they were allowed to show the producers. you know, which was actually against Nazism. Obviously, it was a parody of Nazism, and they weren't able to show the Dictator.
Right.
The Dictator by Charlie Chaplin, and so on, you know. On the other hand, at least you could depict soldiers of that era because they did have other imagery.
Reich.
But still, you know, and you could sort of understand why Germany would be sort of touchy about, you know, about the swastika being, especially since they still have a very
being
strong,
aggrandized, I think is the problem.
Or even just being seen. I mean, they're starting to loosen those laws a bit. But still, you can't show the swastika. As a matter of fact, a lot of games have to change their thing to show.
Yeah, when they go from America, and
like Escape from Castle Wolfenstein and stuff like that. Yep. Yeah, you know, I mean, they make exceptions, of course. I mean, Schindler's List is one of the obvious exceptions. You know, so it's not just here. You know,
it's not just here.
Yeah,
but that would be like the United States government. And see, that's the thing, though.
But,
like, our government can't say. You can't sell Confederate imagery in our country. Why? Because freedom of speech.
The thing is that also the other problem I have with this is that you're not helping by removing that imagery, really. I mean, if it's not a game in which it's talking about, oh, you know, the Confederacy and we're gonna enslave black, you know, one of those white supremacist games, right? The real problem is that when you hide that imagery, when you try to hide that imagery, you're doing a disjustice. You know, because you can't pretend it didn't exist. It existed. It happened. You know, you can't wipe away history. You know,
and how
can you learn from history when you try to ignore it?
Absolutely, and that, quite frankly, leads to the other half of the coin. You know, in order to tell a story set in South during the era of slavery, Walt Disney made a rather naive choice of making Song of the South. In a way that was utterly naive to the fact that slavery was even occurring.
Yeah, but he wasn't a slave. This was post antebellum.
Right.
You know, I mean,
my point is that he tried exactly to make a product that ignored that this was going on at that time and would be affecting these characters. So the man had the utmost best intentions trying to tell this story in a way that would keep people happy. The NAACP. To this day, would boycott anything having to do with that film simply because it denies the fact that slavery happened. It's like, you can't please everybody. You can't say, you know, you can't do it, you know.
Well, that was the criticism of the Patriot.
Or the other.
Because if you remember the Patriot, Mel Gibson, you know, played down slavery like they were, happy indentured servants, you know. It was, you know, that was one of the criticisms. And it's a shame because, you know, Zip-Dee-Doo-Dah is one of my favorite songs. I mean, when you start thinking about it, you can't get it out of your head. You know, Zip-Dee-Doo-Dah, Zip-Dee-Dee-Day, my oh my,
what
a wonderful day. So, you know, but like I said, you know, it reminds me of when 9/11 happened, right? And if you remember, they did a lot to remove imagery of the World Trade Center from movie trailers. Remember Spider-Man?
Oh, absolutely.
Famously?
Absolutely. It held up the release of Spider-Man because Sony had felt that they had to go back and delete every possible sighting of the World Trade Center rather than saying this movie is set just before these terrible events inflicted on our country and we're going to honor them by keeping them included in their place in history.
But the thing is that they were tone deaf because I remember on the streets of New York, what was being sold? T-shirts with the World Trade Center on it, you know. And one of the worst piece of crap movies you might want to see, you might know this film. Glitter.
I don't want to see a piece of crap movie.
Glitter with Mariah Carey in it. They did not have the money to remove the World Trade Center from their film. But when the shot came up, apparently audiences applauded loudly, you know. It was sort of like saying you can't remove the memory of the World Trade Center by pretending it doesn't exist anymore.
Just like you can't pretend the Civil War didn't happen. You can't pretend slavery didn't happen. You can't pretend World War II didn't happen.
And people, you know, people are interested in these subjects, you know, and
people will forever be interested in these subjects.
I mean, not only from from every aspect, really. And by the way, that was also why Martin Scorsese had to delay The Gangs of New York, and it is also why he did not you know, he, what's it called, he did not change the ending time montage, you know, because he left them up. You know, he depicted the World Trade Center, but not after the World Trade Center, and partly because he said he wanted to talk about how a city was built, not torn down. But that was another film that was delayed because of 9/11, you know.
Right, but God forbid you disagree with your distribution channel.
No, Martin Scorsese had some sort of clout.
Right.
I mean, he was able to keep that imagery there in the film. But anyways, getting back to this, you know, it's just... like I said before, Apple knew, you know, they knew this was not offensive. It was not an offensive use of the Confederate flag. It was just a depiction. And they decided to wholesale, just if you have it, get rid of it, you know, just blunt force. And it wasn't until people complained that they actually did something about it.
Right. And what causes offense is very subjective.
Yeah. And the people who are going to be playing this game aren't going to be thinking about what the Confederate flag means. They're just going to say, okay, this represents these troops and these troops. And the thing is that, you know, people play as Nazis in multiplayer all the time. It doesn't mean they espouse Nazi ideals or even that they want to become Nazis. They're just playing one side and the other players are playing another side. They don't think that deeply about it. In this game, they're going to think, okay, this is the Union, this is the Confederacy. How can I move my troops so that I can, let's go win this battle, you know, more efficiently? That's what they're thinking. They're not thinking about...
I think the entire thing is ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. And we have two new writers from Amiibo. Ooh. From Amiibo Lover. Paul should stay because he loves Amiibos and there's nothing like collecting them. Can't wait for Disney Infinity 3.0 and please, please, please stay. Paul, we need you.
Aww.
So
Amiibo Lover wrote in just to say that he liked me.
Yeah.
That she liked me.
Or she, yeah. We don't know. I think they're young. It seems young.
Now, seems
watch
young.
Watch this, a 45-year-old male now. And sorry if I offended you. Okay, go ahead, Paul, with the next item.
From Alpha Shard. Alpha Shard's not new.
No, he's not.
Great long episode with many topics to respond to. At Gamergate at E3, I agree with Paul. Women have been in gaming since there was video games. I've grown up with Rosella of Daventry, Laura Beau from Dagger of Amon-Ra and Colonial's Bequest, Final Fantasy VI's Terra and Celeste, Chrono Trigger's Lucia, Alia, and Nadia/Marley, Jill of the Jungle, Shell of Portal, the list of characters goes on, and there are many of those are available online, not to mention all the games that allow you to choose your gender. So really, there shouldn't be any of this worry or hesitation when games with female leads do fine. Who do you think makes the games, guys?
And by the way, the female Shepherd is a little more popular than male Shepherd.
Yeah, just saying. Also, in Fallout 3, you can play female. Here's my daughter's character, Stella.
And I don't,
we'll have a link there.
I don't remember being able to choose sex. Like I said, I only played once and I had one character, so I didn't really do the character creation too much.
Yeah, but it just didn't appeal to you as a player, and that's fine.
No,
we have different tastes.
No, I just made myself in the game. That's why.
Right, because that was your goal. You're a different type of player, obviously. Than someone who would go and make all four characters or whatever.
Yeah.
Moving on, I made an error on last episode's comments. I meant Fallout 4's Boston will be twice the size of Skyrim and was commenting on Jonah's feeling burned out on huge open world games. While still on the topic of Fallout, Paul, I'm sorry if you feel snubbed, but you made your disdain of the series pretty clear. I didn't think you would be insulted at all.
Interesting.
I don't disdain the series. I'm kind of completely neutral on it. It's just not my kind of game. Shooting things, doesn't really appeal to me. I've never liked this mentality and have rebelled against the idea that hardware should be replaced after 2 years. Thank you. Another rational adult. I know my NES and Super Nintendo lasted much longer than 2 years. At question of the week, I think Nintendo should represent itself. I would still want to know what games they are working on their future or current hardware. A great and entertaining episode, you guys.
Okay. So the other new listener from Tony K, long time, first time, and that's basically shorthand for long time listener, first time caller. It's from radio. This is the first time I've written in. I just have to ask this of Paul: which are you more interested in? Which are you more into, Disney or My Little Pony?
Oh dear God, it's fucking Sophie's Choice over here.
That proves he's a long-time listener because he asked that question.
Oh my God.
A first-time listener would not ask that question.
I'm going to have to answer this logically because it's like asking me to choose between my firstborn and my baby. So my history or my hopes for the future. I'm going to pick Disney only because, and there's only because the current incarnation of My Little Pony, which I love so much, and really gives me hope about what we can achieve in the children's entertainment arena, is sadly one very specific product. It is one television show, one intellectual property, whereas Disney has 100 times the potential to get on board quickly and help shape some positive change in our world.
Watch, Disney buys My Little Pony so you don't have to choose anymore.
Oh my God, I'd be so happy. I'd be so happy. But no, just as an aside, Disney has officially reached the point where if they buy a single other IP, they will be in violation of monopoly laws for children's entertainment.
So we want more people who have been listening to write in because, you know, we want to hear from you. We want to hear that we have more than Alpha Shard and Arthur V and you know, other regulars, you know. So look for our show.
Or hey, I'd love to hear from some of our irregular regulars. Waka waka.
Well, me and Paul are the irregular regulars.
I mean, hey, if one arm is slightly longer than the other, who am I to judge?
Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. I'll set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net or tmrzoo.com. Because that's the third arm of this, which I seldom ever mention, is that since, you know, Game Stooge went away, our podcasts are also published on tmrzoo.com.
Oh, nice.
You can send comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments because we love iTunes comments. You can follow me at Jonah Falcon and Paul at Stager Monkey, and that might change, although he may change it after he's gone from the podcast.
Yeah, I'm more than likely wouldn't confuse people in the 10 weeks before I go.
But, you know, the thing is that we still have to give your new Twitter even after you're gone so that people can still contact you, because there'll be fans of the show who want to talk to you or send messages.
That's true. And you know what? Nobody messaged me through Twitter, guys. I mean, you know, I really kind of still don't get it, what it is about Twitter. I mean, the people I've contacted through Twitter, I already have on Facebook. If I wanted to message most of these people, I would just text them directly or call them.
Anyways, thanks for listening, and God, I hope this recorded. Anyways...
But if anything, I found a few places to have actual moments of indignation.